Hello. Oh, where, oh, where has my little dog gone? Went the old song. Be grateful I'm not singing it to you. But what's worrying some guide dog owners is where has the service gone which helped people give their dog free running when they weren't working?
It's critically important for the health and happiness of my guide dog, Kenyon. He's a fantastic guide dog, incredible in every way, but his recall is really not good. There was a lot of times when he wouldn't come back. And if I was on my own in a giant field, it was really concerning and not safe.
We'll be getting some answers to that question later in the programme. But first, a far more all-embracing problem which faces people who are in the process of losing their sight. As if there aren't enough things to worry about as you confront what this is about to mean to your life, you're faced with a bewildering picture of just where to get help, whether it's diagnosis, what benefits you might be entitled to, getting advice on acquiring the skills you're going to need to navigate this new situation. You need a kind of roadmap which tells you who does what, and this is what the RNIB and its partners hope that they've produced. Two documents, one aimed at professionals, one for the general public, telling you exactly that, who does what, and the order in which things should happen. Well, I'm joined by Rob Cooper, RNIB's Director of Strategic Engagement. First, Rob, could you describe what you think these documents do, which isn't done at the moment?
A couple of years ago, as part of our research, we engaged with around 400 people who'd experienced sight loss or been on an eye care journey. And what we identified is that there was a number of pain points on that journey. As a result of extensive engagement and then engaging with over 23 of our professional bodies, we came up with the idea of creating an eye care support pathway to look at ways in which we can better articulate both to professionals and to patients about the types of support they should be receiving on their eye care journey. The three thematic areas that came out of that was people wanted to understand what actually might happen. They wanted to understand better their diagnosis and the impact of that diagnosis. And they also wanted to ensure that people had access to the right information, emotional and practical support.
What order should things happen in? Because that's what people need to know. I mean, presumably you've got to get your diagnosis first, haven't you? That ought to be straightforward enough.
I'd love to say yes. Unfortunately, the pathways are not necessarily linear, depending on where people start their journey. But as part of the eye care support pathway, we had to recognise a starting point. And for many people, that is having their initial appointment at, say, their optician's. And then from there, if the optician identifies some kind of problem, they will then refer people into hospital, into a secondary care setting. And that's where we've got having my diagnosis. So making sure that that diagnosis is confirmed by a healthcare professional. Then we've got the support after my diagnosis. So how can we support people after that diagnosis? And then ultimately living well with my condition.
So what are you saying to the professionals then about what they should be doing? Because the problem is, what I would have thought people new to this situation want is one person who can sort of take them by the hand and guide them through the process. Does such a person exist?
Actually, I don't think it is down to just one person. I think we all have a key part to play, whether that be the optician, whether that be the ophthalmic nurse, whether that be the consultant, the low vision practitioner, or even the rehabilitation officer in local authority. And as part of this work, everybody has an opportunity to make sure that they connect into the non-clinical support that is provided that we know ultimately will get them to the support that they need.
I'm a bit surprised that in that list you haven't mentioned the ECLO, the eye care liaison officer, people who can do this very job, really.
There's about 800,000 patients a year in the UK being referred from optometry into secondary care services. Now, physically, ECLOs will not be able to see all those patients. So it's everyone's responsibility, and that's why the pathway starts in that kind of community primary care setting in optometry, because we all have a responsibility to help patients on that journey.
Let me bring in someone who represents one group of professionals in this. Dr. Peter Hampson is Clinical and Policy Director at the Association of Optometrists. What's your reaction to this? I mean, what more could optometrists do and what tools would you need to do it?
So, I mean, I think this is a great piece of work, and at the Association of Optometrists, we're big supporters of it. I think the reaction is there's always more that we can do. Optometrists are incredibly well placed to help. Patients are very familiar with us, often before they have a diagnosis of eye disease or sight loss. And what they need is pathways like this that make it very obvious and very clear where they need to send patients, where they can direct their patients to get help, and what the steps are if things aren't working, who they can then turn to and say, this has broken down.
Is there enough cooperation between the various professionals?
I think the will to cooperate is there. I think the technology to cooperate, unfortunately, is often limited. The sort of connectivity between the different silos, for want of a better term, means that we don't often have access to what's happened at the hospital appointment. We don't know what the patient's already being told, and vice versa.
To bring Rob back in, doesn't there have to be one person or at least one profession driving the process? So therefore, how will it be enforced? Isn't the danger here that you've created a roadmap, but maybe not provided the car to drive along the road?
We've done a lot of work nationally and RNIB with the likes of Visionary, with LOCSU and with TPT Sight Loss Councils will be driving this pathway across our regions. But ultimately, one of the things that we also wanted to do here was to empower our patients and to empower our people so that when people are on that eye care journey, if they got this document, they could then use that to ask the questions, to ask, why haven't they been referred for an appointment with an ECLO? Why haven't they been referred for a low vision assessment? Why haven't they been issued a certificate of vision impairment, which then helps them receive the rehabilitation services in that local authority setting? So there's also an opportunity here to really ensure that people are actively participating on their eye care journey. They can self-advocate.
Has this document that you want the public to use, has it been written in plain English so that people can actually read it, understand it and know what they ought to do?
The lay version was co-created with a task and finish group specifically of people with eye care and sight loss. So it's on the rnib.org.uk website. You can get that from our publications. Or if you ask Alexa to ring RNIB helpline, we'll get a copy sent out to people.
Okay. There, we'll have to leave it. We'll see how it goes. Rob Cooper, Dr. Peter Hampson, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
As always, we'd like to hear your experiences of coping in those early days of losing your sight. What happened to you? Contact details at the end of the programme. But now to one of those services which people fear they might be losing and about which there's considerable confusion at the moment. When we told you earlier this year about the financial situation facing guide dogs, with savings of millions of pounds needed, one of the first services to go was the My Guide scheme, where people who needed it could be provided with a companion who could accompany them, perhaps on trips to go shopping or just take a pleasant walk. A lot of you told us and are still telling us how upset you were about this whole business. People like Charmaine Ashpole.
The service had been working brilliantly for me. I had an ischemic stroke in 2018 at the age of 45. In a family with two young daughters, they were only 2 and 5 when it happened. I just finished vision rehabilitation services, which were fantastic. And My Guide kind of picked up where that left off. I'd lost my sight and some of my hearing, and I just needed a lifeline, really, to get me out and about. And My Sighted Guide was that lifeline, and it was just brilliant for both of us, a really good relationship.
What were the specific things you felt it enabled you to do that you probably wouldn't have been able to?
I knew I could improve my mobility and fitness, sort of putting on weight. I needed to get out and about, and just mentally feeling better for just being able to get out in the community with my guide's assistance. My volunteer got the same communication. It was a generic message, and it was awful. It just made us feel really upset, both of us.
But we're now hearing about an associated service. People who, for a variety of reasons, need a sighted assistant to help them give their dogs some free running off the harness. Guide dog owner Will Toms is someone who really values the service. What makes it so important for you, Will?
I mean, it's critically important for the health and happiness of my guide dog, Kenyon. He's a fantastic guide dog, incredible in every way, but his recall, so when we're going free running and I whistle or call him back, is really not good. And he gets extremely distracted by other dogs with balls. When I first had him, there was a lot of times when he wouldn't come back. And if I was on my own in a giant field, it was really concerning and not safe. And so we did a whole bunch of work with the guide dog trainers, instructors that were brilliant, trying to find different methods, different high value rewards, little fishes, bits of chicken and sausages and all sorts of things to kind of encourage him back. But the thing he loved the most was other dogs' toys, basically. We even got him his own toy, but it's just part of who he is. And it's really important that he has a free run. And so having someone who's sighted take him is perfect because he doesn't run away, you know, out of the park or anything like that. A sighted person can just walk over to him and pop the lead on, and it works extremely well.
At the moment, you've got a permanent volunteer to do this?
Yes, we have a really good relationship and he takes him regularly, and I can't go with the volunteer because I believe that there isn't insurance to cover me and the volunteer, but the priority isn't me, the priority is Kenya, the dog, you know.
But there seems to be some confusion about the plans for this service. Did it end at the same time as the My Guide service? Has it just recently been discontinued? Is it finishing in December? Or indeed, is it finishing at all? All scenarios which different guide dog owners say that they've heard. So, what's the real situation? Mark Sanderson is Director of Skills, Information and Support with Guide Dogs. And I asked him exactly that question. What's going on?
It's important to remember that guide dog owners are responsible for free running their dog as part of responsible dog ownership, and where they can, arranging that support within their family, friendship group or community. But we've always supported those who need extra assistance through our dog exercising volunteers and continue to do so.
So why do people think it's ending? I mean, where's this come from?
There were about 120 people using services who were utilising, supporting free running as part of the My Sighted Guide partnership. So our teams have actually been working very actively with those people to look at how we can support them with the cessation of the My Sighted Guide service to identify support for free running. And in fact, the vast majority of people have now been enabled to do that. And we're working actively now with those service users and volunteers to see how they can transfer to a dog exerciser volunteering relationship to support them.
So these would not necessarily be the people who had been their My Sighted Guide. This would be a different person.
Not necessarily. We're working with the existing volunteers who've been supporting individuals to see if they are able and willing and can move to a dog exerciser volunteering role. And we're in that process at the moment to make sure that people have, you know, are up to date with their training and support and they wish to continue in that role. If that's not possible, if the volunteer is not able to continue, then we will, of course, be identifying a new volunteer to support with that particular task.
There seemed to be confusion, though, on the part of the owners and the volunteers. I mean, we've heard from some of the volunteers who assist people with free running, people like Cass Davies, who says, my own users are genuinely distraught with these changes. Neither of my users have family and friends who can help them. If a visually impaired person needs help from family or friends, wouldn't they have stepped up to the plate from the beginning? She has a point, doesn't she, Mark?
Yes, and as I said earlier, Guide Dogs has always been committed to supporting those partnerships where assistance is needed with free running. We've always done that, Peter, and we'll always continue to do that where it's needed. That's for existing guide dog owners who were not using the My Sighted Guide service, and also recently with the cessation of that service, working with those relatively small number of people, about 25, who will continue to require that support. And we're putting that in place as I speak.
So is it quite possible that there are people who haven't had this satisfactorily sorted out yet?
It is a work in progress, but we're well on track now for closing the My Sighted Guide service by the end of October. So the vast majority of people have had the new support put in place for them. And if that's not quite happened for everyone now, I would imagine it will be happening within the next 3 or 4 weeks' time.
Now, I mean, just looking at it more generally, we know guide dogs have to make savings, but surely this isn't a very expensive scheme to run, is it? I mean, the people who do it, as you've said, are volunteers. Is this really going to save you that much money?
Well, the financial challenges aside, as we've previously reported, you know, looking to the future, we were recognising that the My Sighted Guide service, which, as you said, relies heavily on a significant volunteer base, also had a significant number of guide dog staff supporting it to make sure that those partnerships are safe and secure and effective. And it is a service that had evolved over time. So this was a decision that we needed to make in order to ensure that, you know, we weren't trying to provide a service that was inequitable across the UK for people.
So if there are people listening to this now who feel that they've got a problem, they need this help and they're not getting it, what would you advise them to do?
Well, I would hope that they're all already in touch with our team who are supporting them moving from their My Sighted Guide partnership and looking at if they require free running support. But if we have existing guide dog owners who are not able to engage with that support in their friends, family and community group, then I'd encourage them to contact us through Guideline and we'll look at their individual circumstances and see how and if we can support them.
I mean, it does rather sound as if you're putting the onus on them to find a solution.
All of the service users who we're working with on the My Sighted Guide service, we have been in touch with every one of them and are there to support them. So there's no onus on them to contact us. We're proactively contacting them. If, however, we have guide dog owners out there who are listening, who aren't benefiting from free running support and feel that they need to do because they're not able to mobilise that within their own circle of support, then I'm inviting them to contact us through Guideline and to discuss their individual situation.
Mark Sanderson of Guide Dogs. Well, Will Toms is still here listening to that. I'm just interested, Will, did you know there was a specific service for running the dogs, you know, called Dog Exerciser Volunteer?
I didn't necessarily know it was called that. I'd say in general, though, I think it would be a reasonable thing for guide dogs now to communicate out to all the people that are using that service, just practically to say, you know, to save any confusion, your service will be continuing. I'd say, particularly at the beginning of his statement, kind of this emphasis on owners that they have the responsibility to look after the dogs and care for the dogs and the dog's well-being, which is obviously completely, completely true. But it's one of those things where we know that. We love our guide dogs. That's they're given. And the reason we're asking for help isn't because we're lazy or we don't want to do it ourselves. It's because it's the right thing for the dog, to keep the dog safe. And so I think guide dogs could potentially recognise that guide dog owners love and look after the dogs and want the best for them, and they need these services for the right reasons.
Will Toms, thank you very much. And that's it for today. I promise you those contact details. You can email your responses to intouch@bbc.co.uk. You can leave voice messages on 01 6161 836 1338, or you can go to our website on bbc.co.uk/intouch for more information. Next week, we start our Brains Trust on technology and the struggles some people have with assistive technology, particularly getting face-to-face help. We'd still welcome your views and experiences so that we can include them.